good audience this evening. We appreciate your presence. I hope you have a copy of the outline. As I've been mentioning all through this weekend, that we will have outlines of every lesson. If you don't have outlines of the earlier lessons, we have those over here. You can also go online and get the material, PowerPoint, and audio as they were posted. Good to be back with everyone. Good to see familiar faces. Good to see visitors. I appreciate the opportunity for us to look at some very practical truths. If you want to serve God, you're going to go down a narrow path. If you want to serve God, you're going to find that our adversary Satan is going to make it hard on you. Christianity is the most joyful, abundant life that you can have, but it's going to have bumps, opposition. I want to talk tonight about overcoming taming the storms of misunderstanding. What do you do when people believe something bad about you? What do you do when people misrepresent you? How do you handle that? Has God forsaken you when that happens? Is that something unanticipated? Well, I hope you'll think with me as we go through this process. You know, when you speak of understanding, I really believe basic understanding in any realm is basically a spiritual issue. I've come to realize as I work with people of how easy it is to lose your mind. Of how easy it is because of an emotional state or something else to shut down the thinking process. The older I get, the more I realize how vulnerable we are as humans. When you talk about understanding, look at the emphasis of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 1:5. A wise man will hear and increase learning. And a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb, an enigma, the words of the wise and the riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. If you really want to understand, it's going to have to start with a fear of God. And you really need to know, understanding does not come easy. It doesn't come easy. Look at Proverbs 2:2. So that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment, lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and knowledge of God. We live in a land of ease. We live in a land where people say, you have your reality and I have my reality, and you have your truth and I have my truth. And right now, just for now, this society is going to change, I'm afraid. I'm afraid you're going to see the collapse of our currency and many other things. That's just my guess. I can't tell you what may happen. But right now, we're living in the culture of no consequences. That's not going to continue. People who want to understand need to understand that you got to have a certain kind of mindset. Verse 6, the Bible says, for the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. I see a lot of people who don't want to see. And you know what? If you don't want to see, God's not going to make you see. You can just create your reality. And you can live in it and experience the consequences of that. Understanding is not easy. I keep going back to this premise. It requires a spiritual commitment. Here God talks about men in general. Us guys and girls in general, men in general, we don't want to see. Proverbs 12:15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. Proverbs 16:2, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. How many people do you generally see want to have friends that will tell them what they need to hear and not what they want to hear? That's hard. That is not common. And as a result, many people are led as lambs to the slaughter. They're blind. And that's where Satan's power is found. What is the greatest work of Satan? Satan is known as a liar and the father of all lies by Jesus. John 8:44, you are of your father the devil. The desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth. There is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own resources. For he is a liar and the father of it. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Satan's goal is to shut your mind down. And you may think, that's not going to happen to me. And I hope you're right. But I want to tell you, Satan is no little trite opponent. Satan is infinitely wiser than you and I. And without God's help, we can't stand against him. Look at Ephesians 4:17, describing the Gentile world as a rule, as a whole. Here's how God views the world. He views the world of where they're at. And here's how he describes the Gentile world. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. I'll say it one more time. Most people don't see. Most people don't want to see. And as a result, Satan is described in the Scriptures as the god of this world. In the Bible, we read about a phrase that's described as a sound mind. Can I say something honestly? We talked about anger this weekend. We talked about bitterness. We talked about emotion. I cannot tell you how many Christians that were standing shoulder to shoulder with me 20 and 30 years ago that now wouldn't darken the door of a faithful church, who out of bitterness shut their minds down and they wouldn't dare open the Bible with me anymore. I've had people turn on me as if I was their enemy, and I have done nothing to them. But one of the ploys of Satan is get our emotions stirred, get us determined where we're not going to accept the truth, not because it's true or not, because we don't want to. There is tremendous power in Satan to mess up our thinking. I hope to show you how that works. As I've already mentioned, Satan is called the ruler of this world by Jesus in John 14:30. Okay, let me start off here. Do you understand my point that the world really has a sick understanding? Okay, do we accept that? If you and I as Christians want to serve the Lord, guess what's going to happen to us? People are going to misunderstand us. This world is not fair. You've heard that a few times this week, haven't you? This world's not fair. So now let's talk about some of the struggles to just define God. If you're a believer in God, I want to tell you something. You're a minority. I'm talking about a believer in the true God. Really committed to Scripture. There's not many people that do that. It's quite interesting as you go through Scriptures. And by the way, my Tuesday night lesson, I've got a whole lesson on this point where it really is developed. We talk about the test of finding truth. But have you ever noticed in the Scripture, here an inspired apostle gave the perfect arguments, said the perfect words, gave the perfect evidence, worked signs that show the power of God. Here, in essence, God is giving the evidence. And notice the responses. Acts 8:24. And some were persuaded by the things which were spoken, and some disbelieved. Why did that happen? Same evidence. People heard the same thing. Some believed, some disbelieved. Why did that happen? Well, why that happened is why a lot of things happen. As the explanation was given by the inspired writer, verse 26, it says, God said, go into this people and say, hearing you will hear, and she'll not understand. And seeing you will see, and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn so that I should heal them. If you want to shut your mind down, God will not open it. You have to want the truth. And if you're going to seek the truth, I'm going to tell you, it's not always easy. My whole Tuesday night lesson is talking about the obstacles that sometimes are put in your way as you're seeking truth. A lot of things blind people today. I'm glad people are educated. I'm glad people have the ability to reason and pursue higher degrees.
Back in Paul's day, there were those that loved the worldly wisdom. And notice, and there were others wanting the personal experience of personal signs with the Jews. Notice 1 Corinthians 1:22, for Jews request a sign and Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block and to the Greeks foolishness. Let me tell you another thing about truth. God is not going to bring it out to you on a silver platter. You may have come here tonight and not expecting to hear some guy with a southern accent. I don't know I have an accent, but I've come to Lincoln. Some people tell me I do. And you might not have wanted somebody with this got kind of old and got his hair sticking out everywhere and looked kind of funny in other ways, and maybe not have perfect English. We cannot go to God and say, God, I want the truth, but you're going to have to come to me like a servant boy and give it exactly the way I want it. Do you know how God will give you the truth? Sometimes He'll give you the truth and you're going to have to go down through paths you despise. Like, oh man, I've got to work through this. God oftentimes will give you the truth in a contradiction. And you may say, how can this be true? This is a contradiction. And you're going to have the commitment to work through that contradiction. You go through Scriptures, you'll see that to be true. In verse 26, God gives His truth in such a way by design that only a few people will find it. Verse 26, for you see your calling, brother, not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish thing of this world to put to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty. And we can go on and read here, but the point I'm trying to make to you is that the finding truth, honest, good people, willing to reason, are rare. Most people do what they do religiously because of relationships. Most people believe what they believe religiously because of some convenience. There are not many people that are going to say, Lord, look, I want to know, and whatever it is, that's what I'm going to do. That's not common. And I'm afraid sometimes within the church you end up with churches that eventually have people within the church that maybe the church is outwardly practicing the truth, but you can have within generations within Christians where the faith is not established in the children. And another generation comes up and they lose that. I remember many years ago, 1970, I was a sophomore in high school. It was a cold February night. Not like Lincoln, Nebraska cold. You know, this is Birmingham, Alabama cold. Very big difference. And I remember going out and just praying to God. I didn't attend church. Never really studied my Bible. My family didn't attend church. I remember praying to God, saying, Lord, if You're out there, I'd like to know. And it wasn't maybe another year or two, I started my own Bible reading. Nobody told me to read the Bible. I just started my own reading. And this is a verse that means a lot to me. Jesus says, if anyone wills to do His will, he shall know concerning the doctrine whether it is from God or whether I speak on my own authority. Is that you? Are you there where you say, Lord, if it's there, I'll do it? You better buckle on your seatbelt. That attitude is going to take you places you never dreamed you'll go. You'll end up doing things you never dreamed you would do. You'll end up meeting people you never dreamed you would meet, and you will be blessed. Not a lot of people doing that. And I won't repeat what I read in the book of Acts, because Jesus repeats it in His ministry. He basically quotes Isaiah again. Why does He speak in parables? He says, therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. Do you understand this? Jesus spoke in a way where the majority of people would not understand Him. Does it mean they couldn't understand Him? No, they could understand Him. But He spoke in parables, because guess what you do with a parable? You go and go, what does that mean? You know what a lot of people do when they read something in the Bible? What does that mean? And they just forget about it. What do you do when you find a verse you don't understand? Do you then maybe go back, I'm going to find out what it means? Ooh, not a lot of people do that. And I hope that challenges us. We go on and we could quote the verse we quoted earlier. If you're going to find the truth of God, you're going to have to dig deep, and you can't be discouraged by the test that God gives. Do you have what it takes? By the way, I'm changed the outline. By the way, if you're following the outline, all of a sudden I'm going to another territory. I'm actually used Roman numeral 3 yesterday in the outline, so I'm kind of changing it up a little bit. You know one of the first challenges I had when I started studying the Bible? What must a person do to be saved? You know, I heard all my life John 3:16.
A wonderful verse. We need to read it, meditate on it.
Beautiful verse. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that's a verse that talks about the power of faith. And some people read the verse and say, faith only. Really? Not if you read other verses. I read in the ministry of Jesus where Jesus said, Luke 13:3, I tell you nay, unless you repent, you'll all likewise perish. Well, Jesus didn't say repent in John 3:16. That's right. Guess what you have to do? You have to go through the Bible and take all the verses on a given subject. And did you know when you do that, you'll still find some things that puzzle you? Why did Jesus say in Mark 16:16, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved? Are you telling me baptism is essential to salvation? You know, a lot of people will say, well, let's just look at the verses on belief. And others will say, you know, and I'm telling you, and again, I'm kind of talking about Tuesday night lesson. You need to take everything and study it and look at it and then draw conclusions. And it was not always easy. The Bible at times appears to contradict itself. It doesn't. How many people in the college scene believe that the Bible is inspired God? Not many people. How do you know the Bible's inspired, buddy? You've got to dig for truth. And again, I'm not going to present that tonight. I'd love to. I'd love to talk about these subjects. One of the things that you need to do if you're going to try to find truth is really try to have the right motive. Some people don't want to know. There was a woman once whose husband never became a Christian, and says, can't you make your husband become a Christian? And she says, look, his want power is stronger than my willpower. There are people that Jesus couldn't make become Christians. There are people that won't listen to the evidence of God. And rather than looking at everybody else, let's look at our heart. Are we pure-hearted people? Willing to go where the truth of God leads us. The Bible says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. We have to have a commitment to that which is true. Now, I'm going to skip down a little bit in the outline, and I want to talk about another point. I do this commonly. Here, in my opinion, is the strongest, how can I put it, weapon in Satan's disposal. You might get your attention to that. What would be the weapon most likely to turn thee away from truth? You know what my opinion is? Relationships. Let me give you an example. In John 9, there was a man who had been born blind. Could you imagine being the parents of that man? They didn't have Social Security then, or disability. Here was a man who was going to spend the rest of his life in a very tough state, and he had been there for many years. And could you imagine being the parents of this man, and the day came he was able to see? You know what they did on the day that this man was able to see? Listen to this. His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him. He will speak for himself. Now let me tell you what's happening here. On the day of their son receiving his sight, they're selling him out. They know that Jesus had healed his son, and they were not going to admit the truth. Why? What power on earth could move a parent on this beautiful day to say we don't know? Verse 22. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. It was an old Charlie Brown comic strip where he was talking about the crush he had on the red-haired girl, I believe it was, and he found out that the red-haired girl went down to this other church, and he said, I remember the saying is, I'll change your theology in a hurry, won't it? There are a lot of people, because of relationships, will change what they believe. When I became a Christian, I had to go against my family. Jesus said He came into this world to cause division that will cause parent to go against child and child against parent. Do you want the truth? I'll tell you what, you'll walk down that path. The world's got no hope of understanding because, as I said earlier, they're blinded. And really, I mean, you go talk about this world. I'm tell you, I'm sorry, but we're going to go a little over tonight because we just started a little late. But I look at this world and I think some of the things they believe in. Men came from some primeval soup. The theories they've got on economics and the theories that some people have on, you know, global warming and some of these other things. You don't have to agree with me on those. But there are things that I look at and I look at evidence and I'm thinking, there's something more driving this than evidence. 2 Corinthians 4:3-4. But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose mind the God of this age is blinded. Satan can mess your thinking up where you don't want to see. I'll give you an example. A couple of examples. You know why Jesus, when they crucified Jesus? It wasn't for the evidence. They didn't have the evidence. They couldn't convince Pilate. Pilate said, he's innocent, he's innocent, he's innocent, he's innocent. And Pilate knew that these people were crucifying Jesus because they were envious of him. But think about Pilate. Pilate says, he's innocent. And then he says, you can crucify him. Why did Pilate do that? He's a politician. He can admit the truth, but wouldn't stand for it. Truth will cost you if you believe it and stand upon it. People get angry. You know it's easier. I tell you again. But this is my hobby. I told you this is my hobby. I preach on this all the time. One of the easiest ways to get people to stop thinking, get them angry. Get them mad. Proverbs 18:19. A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a castle. I've had people talk about me and get others mad, and they wouldn't listen to me. Wouldn't matter what I said. Satan is effective at throwing, just shutting the mind down. Some people say, well, if you've got a good law, then you can come to know the truth. Well, you know, the Romans had a good law. In Acts 25:16, when somebody disagrees with another, somebody's got an accusation to another, it says, to them I answer, it is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meet the accusers face to face, and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him. This was dealing with Paul. Paul was innocent. They had no evidence that he was guilty. And guess what he had to do? Had to appeal to Rome. Why? The Jews were working political deals out. Relationships. You can have the best laws on earth, and if they're not applied, it doesn't mean anything. Let's talk a little bit about economics, just briefly. This is an illustration for today's current events. Do you guys realize what's happened to our country in the last 10 years? Do you realize that, I was reading it several years ago, that we basically created worldwide $800 trillion in funny money. We took mortgages, sold mortgages to, I think I've heard as many as 1 million illegal aliens, and mortgages to people who couldn't afford it. And then we took those mortgages that really had no basis of people being able to buy them back, and we turned them into financial instruments. Gave them AAA ratings, leveraged it 30 to 40 to 1, and we sold them as investment vehicles to the whole world. That's why we're experiencing the problems we are right now. And you turn and look at this, and you can say, how could this happen? How could all these smart people on Wall Street, in the banking industry, could have possibly let this happen? I'll tell you why. Because there was money to be made. And they didn't want to see it.
And there was a beautiful article written in the British paper. You don't see this generally written in American paper. He's talking about this catastrophe that has occurred and is still affecting us. He says, but when religion loses its voice and the media worship success, when right and wrong become relativized and morality is condemned as judgmental, when people lose all sense of honor and shame and there is nothing they won't do if they can't get away with it, no regulation will save us. Congress is not going to fix this by passing more laws. The regulations are already in place. He says people will outwit the regulators as they did by the securitization of risk so that no one knew who owed what to whom. The title of his article, Morals, the One Thing Markets Don't Make. And I love the conclusion. No amount of regulation will restore our sense of honor and shame. Economics needs ethics. And it was written by a man by Jonathan Sachs. Okay, rest of the lesson. Another 15 minutes or so, we can go. Let's talk about the rest of the lesson if we could. Now, let's talk about practical speaking. What happens when people misunderstand us? I think you've heard me talk about this some already. What happens when somebody thinks I'm a bad guy? That I've done something bad? Or that I'm, you know, think something about my character? It's not true. Jesus prepared us for this in John 15. John 15, 18, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you're of the world will love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they'll also persecute you. If they kept my word, they'll keep you also, keep yours also. But all these things they will do for you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. Let's say somebody came to you, and you know that Larry Rouse that's coming up? He's kind of a really ignorant guy with a southern accent. And he really, you know, he's a guy that really, you just are wasting your time to go hear him. He'll lie, he'll misrepresent, he'll cheat you out of money. And he pulls for Alabama. No, anyway, look, yeah, at least the last part would be true. You know, somebody says those things, and a lot of people go, well, I'm just not going to go. I'm not going to hear him. That's what most people do. If you hear a false report about somebody, you go, okay, I'm not going to bother with it. Guess what you'd have to do if you wanted to find out truth? You would have to lift your little finger a little higher. If you wanted to know the truth, you're going to have to put in effort to it. And guess what most people won't do? They don't put any effort into it. I'm sorry, this world we live in. If people misrepresent you and it gets out there, it's not going to get correct. And so, folks, that's the way it is. Most people won't, self-centered people won't make effort. We read these verses this morning. Remember how we talked about King David and Saul? Or it was yesterday we talked about this. Psalms 35, 19. Let them not rejoice over me who are wrongfully my enemies. Nor let them weep without who hate me without a cause. Psalm 69, 4. Those who hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. They are mighty who would destroy me, being my enemies wrongfully. Though I've stolen nothing, I still must restore it. Satan uses slander because he knows most people are not going to dig deeper. We read this a moment ago in your hearing. But remember the verses we just quoted in Psalms, they hated me without a cause. Do you know where this was applied to? This was applied to Jesus. Verse 25, but this happened that the word might be fulfilled which is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. They hated Jesus without a cause. They'll hate his followers without a cause. You're not going to be popular being a Christian. Not a real Christian. Alright? How is Jesus misrepresented? Let's say we lived in Jesus' day. First off, let me just mention something. I'll talk about this teaching tonight. But you know when Jesus preached his lessons, you know, he could have preached his lessons where everybody believed. You know how he could have done that? Instead of using one of these, he could have used the sky. He could have had his own PowerPoint. Point one, lightning sheds. And here's point one, I am the Son of God. And everybody was like, this is him. He didn't do it that way. Did you know he rarely said, I was the Son of God? He said it a few times. But what he did is he put evidence out there that people who really thought through it would go, you're the Son of God. Remember when he talked to Peter?
Who do men say that I am? Well, they say to some, you're John the Baptist, some Elijah, one of the prophets. Who do you say that I am? You're the Christ. And Jesus commended that. Jesus wants us to have that attitude. He doesn't make it easy. If you'd lived in Jesus' day, here's what they said about Jesus. Here Jesus says, people not listening to me. Here's why they're not listening to me. But the what shall I lack in this generation is like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling to their companions and saying, we played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We mourned for you, and you did not lament. In other words, Jesus is saying, they're not listening to me. Why are they not listening to me? Gossip. Look at verse 18. For John came neither eating or drinking, and they say he has a demon. That's John the Baptist. By the way, if they heard John the Baptist, John the Baptist would say, this is the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. I'm preparing the way for the Messiah. He's coming. Well, they didn't listen to John. Okay, Jesus comes. Verse 19. The Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and they say, look, a glutton and a wine bibber. You see, Satan knows gossip works, and so it doesn't matter what you do. They'll criticize you for walking on your 2 feet, then you go come in walking on your hands, and they'll criticize you for that. Let somebody carry you, they'll criticize you for that. He goes on to say, but wisdom is justified by our children. People wouldn't listen to John or Jesus. And not looser or loser. I'm sorry, I typed that a little quick this afternoon. But who was the loser in this? It was the ones that didn't listen. I remember a few years ago working with a man who had been estranged from his wife. And they were both still attending the congregation, sitting on both sides of the building, and the wife suspected that he had been guilty of adultery. I remember sitting with this man, and he made one charge after another to this wife and to her in-laws that were in the congregation. After a few weeks, he broke down. And he says, Larry, let me tell you what happened. I committed adultery against my wife. And when I committed adultery, you know what I did? I was wrong. And so I started attacking my wife, who was innocent. You may say, why? You were wrong, and so you started attacking her? That is common. When people don't want to admit they're wrong and they don't want to correct that error, they're going to turn around and pour it on to the ones who are innocent. That's the world we live in. Lazy people are not going to find the truth at any level. Ever had to deal with that? Ever had a boss that was unreasonable? Ever had somebody in the church gossip about you? Ever had a friend at school that just was going to slander you and you're kind of thinking, I'd like it to be better. I don't want them to believe this. I'm going to tell you, it's rare. It is rare for a person who believes something bad about you to ever make corrections. We've already talked about this. You cannot change another person against their will. We read this morning. I want to read this again. What did Jesus do when He was slandered? 1 Peter 2:21, for this you were called because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow His steps. Who committed no sin, nor is deceit found in His mouth. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. We read Psalms 53 earlier. Psalms 53:7. What did Jesus say to his injustice? He said not a word. Why did he not hit him back? Why did he not come down from the cross? He said he could have brought legions of angels to bring him down from the cross. He could have lifted his little finger and all those people that were speaking evil of him, he could have wiped them out. Why? He did not revile in return when he suffered. He did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judgeth righteously. Jesus showed us how much he loved us. And on the cross, rather than reviling those people, you know the words that he spoke. In Luke 23:34, then Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. Could I tell you the power of this example in the remaining part of the lesson we have? What do you see when you see somebody who has been mistreated, who's been lied against, who before his own family that shame was put there? And you see this kind of response, I want to tell you, this is where you show how much you trust God. Way too many people get their feelings hurt and they go and quit. Way too many people, they have something bad go and they want to go isolate themselves. In Mark 15:32, there was a couple of witnesses to Christ. We know them as thieves. One thief was crucified on the right, one thief was crucified on the left of Jesus. Have you ever wondered why they were crucified on that day and that time? I don't think the crucifixion was scheduled at that time. You know why they were crucified at that time? Because they knew that the Jews knew that Jesus was innocent, and they wanted to put two obvious criminals on one side or the other. So it appears that Jesus is guilty. This is a bad guy. This is a bad guy. The guy in the middle's got to be bad. Guilt by association. Now imagine being the thieves. The thieves reviled Jesus during a portion of that crucifixion. These thieves probably cursed the soldiers as those nails were going through their hands and through their wrists. They cursed Jesus because they probably recognized Jesus as the reason for their early crucifixion. One of the thieves changed. They saw an innocent man who never struck back. He never reviled in return. They saw Jesus under this intense suffering show a control that they couldn't imagine. They saw Jesus expressing love for the people that hated Him. Many years ago in the dark ages, I graduated from high school. Sometimes I heard Brother D. Bowman talk about it. He was under the Old Testament for him. Talk about how old. I've never gone back to one of my high school reunions. But if I did, there is a man I'd like to see again. He was a drummer in the band, and he tried to live the Christian life. And you know what I did when I was in the band? I made fun of him, because he never did anything bad to me, but I knew he wouldn't curse like I did. He wouldn't go drink like I did. He wouldn't go tell the dirty jokes like I did. And I hated him for it. I tried to do things to him to aggravate him. And you know what? When I finally decided to go start to study my Bible and attend church, you know one of the first churches I visited was? Where he attended. You want to know the greatest power in your life you can show what Christ means to you is how you respond in disappointing times when people hurt you. 1 Peter 2:12. Having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation. I think this last idea here is the idea that your example may open their heart at a future time. That's one possible interpretation of this verse. The world will scream at you, hit him back, but there's a calmness and strength in coming and trusting God. We didn't read these verses yesterday, and I want to read them now to you. What do you do when you have enemies without a cause and you respond by trusting God? Look at some of the verses. Psalm 60:12. Through God we will do valiantly, for it is He who shall tread down our enemies. Psalm 61:2. From the end of the earth I will cry to you, and my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been a shelter to me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wing. Psalm 31:8. And have not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a wide place. We've already read Psalms 23. I want to go to the last section, then the lesson is yours. I haven't said a lot about this, but can I make a point, Christian? Of all the people on the face of the earth, the people that ought to be most committed to justice, most committed to being trustworthy, most committed to hearing both sides of a matter before drawing a conclusion, ought to be the people of God. The people ought to be least likely to say things they ought not, to whisper behind somebody's back, to draw conclusions without proper evidence, ought to be the chief people of God. Zechariah 7:9, I believe, is describing, I think, the church is a prophecy of that. It says, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, execute true justice, show mercy and compassion, everyone to his brother." Micah 6:8, we read this morning, what does God want of people? He wants us to do justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly. One of the characteristics of the Pharisees in Luke 11:42, it says, "But woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manners of herbs and pass by justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." Let me tell you something about one of my early experiences with my close friend and brother Lynn Huggins. This was before Lincoln. This was in the 80s. And I remember one time, I don't know the occasion, but I was talking to him about another brother. And I started telling him, you know what, they've done this and they believe this. And I was telling him about how I'd been hurt. And I'll never forget Lynn slowing me down and says, "Larry, you don't know that." And I stopped for a moment. And I said, "You're right. Thank you, brother. We need to be those kind of people." It's easy to be judge, jury, and executioner, isn't it? Sometimes you walk in the room, somebody laughs, what do you think? Oh, they're laughing about me. I remember times I couldn't get sleep at night because I know somebody's talking about me and they're believing something wrong and I was tossing and turning and I had this terrible conspiracy theory that I had in my mind and I found out later it wasn't true at all. It was just how my mind takes off. Gotta love truth. I need to ask the question, what do I really know when I hear a report? I need to be, as Jesus says in John 7:24, "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge with righteous judgment." See, I'm going to walk down the difficult path of trying to get people, when we're dealing with sin, to get together. When I'm trying to deal with a report about another, sometimes I'm just going to say, "I'm going to believe the best. I mean, this is not something I need even to get involved in." You know the verses, Matthew 18. If somebody sins against you, you've got to go tell it to everybody else and never tell it to that brother, right? Is that how we work it? No. And you know the passage. You know the passage in Matthew 5 where if I believe I've hurt someone and I haven't fixed that, I need to go fix it. Brethren, let's fix things. Let's not play these games. You've got to read my mind. Let's not play these games. I'm hurt. I'm not going to tell you. Let's not play these games. I'm hurt and I'm just going to write you off forever and ever. That's not how Christians act. Matthew 7:12. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law of the prophets." I want to tell you, I've had to deal with some hard things in the last year or two. There were some things that I'd rather have run away from and never dealt with. But I remember thinking, I said, what if it was me? And I was in this position and, you know, the place was swamped. What would I want somebody who loved me to do? And I want to tell you, brethren, if I'm doing things I ought not, if there are things I ought to hear, I hope you'll love me enough to come and deal with me and help me. I wish we can spend more time talking to one another in love and solving the problems that come up. I'm going to give you the passage we concluded with this morning one more time. Mercy. Brethren, I don't want to believe bad things about you. I want to believe the best. That's what the love of God tells me. But one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to be a merciful person. Merciful to correct sin, not run from it. And merciful not to jump to conclusions that I cannot, because one day I'm going to stand before my God. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. The wisdom that comes from above, James 3:17, "For the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy." I know the difference when we have the wisdom that comes from above and the other wisdom mentioned in this context that talks about wisdom that's from below. And there's wisdom from below, there's confusion and every evil word, and everybody goes their own way and we end up just blowing up. You got to fight for this. You got to fight for it. I pray that as you're misrepresented, that it'll draw you closer to God. I'm not going to pray that you never misrepresented, because I think God actually wants that to happen so that we might draw closer to God and be developed in that. But I pray that the local church will always be a place where we're committed to that. I want to tell you something. Being back with you this week, you've made me feel that way. You make me, I wish I'd come back and be here, you know. Y'all know they start dark drafting me or something like that. I tend to do that. I've been just so encouraged by what I'm seeing. And brethren, we've got to fight for that. We've got to fight for that atmosphere. And even when we fail, we've got to get back up. Even when my brethren have hurt me, I need to forgive them. I need to get back up. And we need, with one accord, shoulder to shoulder, to fight the battles of God. Because that's what He wants us to do. I'm so glad my God didn't give up on me. I'm not going to give up on my brother. We can extend the invitation. Get your songbooks out. Invitation to be right with God. An invitation to find forgiveness. An invitation to deal with the things we need to deal with. And I want to tell you, this is a public invitation. We'd love you, if you need to respond publicly, to do that. But always remember, the mercy of God is found at any time. We'd love to encourage you to fight the battle, to see what you need to do, and have the courage to do it. If we can assist you in any way, would you come as we stand and sing?